On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, indeed. We are live. We're out here in our veranda at the Minnesota State Fair, our broadcast center. Yeah, you can applaud. That's quite all right. We like that.
Yeah,
that's
good. Yeah, we don't get applause in the studio.
It's nothing like begging and pleading.
Except for ourselves. applaud ourselves.
Right. Only on the back.
It's good. It's good to see both John and Julie from the University of Minnesota. We really are talking lawns and gardens, or gardens and lawns, if you prefer. That depends who wants the top billing. But Julie Weisenhorn is, of course, heard often here on WCCO. We get a lot of good help from Julie. And if anybody has a lawn or garden question out here in our audience or at home, you can send a text or call us. The same number applies, 651-989-9226. Julie, maybe we can properly introduce John and his specialty.
Yeah, so John is a postdoc with our turf team. And has become quite a fixture on this show, actually. We've spent quite a bit of time, we work together writing articles and then also being on the radio show as well. So
absolutely.
Glad you're here.
Yeah, like always, thanks for having me.
I can just pass it off to you,
so
these
again,
lawn questions.
It really works. If you have a lawn question, John is here for that, and Julie can help out too, I think, in a lot of other ways as well. 651-989-9226. Text 81807. Now, what's happening here at the U of M or at the Hort building? Are you guys from time to time?
Yep. The agricultural and horticulture building is, the main home base for University of Minnesota Horticulture and Yard and Garden. We have one of the spokes in the wheel, I like to call it, in that building is the CFANS, the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Sciences. And that is where our turf team is.
That's
and then
great.
Also we have master gardeners who are on hand to answer any and all yard and garden questions. We have displays and exhibits, and we're not too far from the beer tasting and the wine tasting section, so that's always a plus.
But you guys have quite a crowd in that building don't you?
It's great. Yeah, we have lots of people, and they're rotating through all the time, so every day is going to be a little bit different, and you can get there. If you don't get your question answered today, you can certainly swing by there and somebody will definitely help you out.
Or swing by here or call us or text
That's
us.
Right.
Again,
yeah,
651-989-9226. I'll tell you what, we're already getting callers, so just so we don't get too far behind of either the calls or the text, let's get going here. Ed is calling from Worthington, I believe, first up here. Ed, what is your question?
I got a question. I'm composting my garden leaves and products.
Great.
And my question is, between earthworms and night crawlers, I want to put them in my compost.
Okay.
But night crawlers tend to leave a pretty good pile of mounds in your lawn. And my question would be, do earthworms leave a big pile like that or not so much?
Well, actually, the night crawlers are just another name for earthworms.
Oh.
So they're all the same. I mean, there's different species of worms. None of them are actually native to Minnesota,
or to
the United States at all. They're all from Europe, right, John?
That's correct.
And so I think great for you for composting. That's awesome. But I don't think you're going to have to worry too much if you're putting that compost into your garden bed, because they're going to be pretty darn happy in that garden bed. I don't know if they'll move into the lawn at all, John?
Yeah, maybe if you start spreading the compost and they go down below in the permafrost in the wintertime, or, down below as it freezes, but they could escape.
Yeah, but that's great. They'll help to actually break down your compost pile, so that's terrific.
Speaking of gardens now, what is this a good time of year? I think we've talked about this many times. What can we do for our lawns, whether it needs seeding or fertilizing? What can we do? Aeration?
This is the best time of the year to basically do most of your lawn care practices to improve it over time. So right now could be aerification if you're worried about soil compaction, fertilizer for this is the best time of year to fertilize because you're fertilizing the lawn, not the weeds. And the grasses would be getting ready for next year. So, and you could do some broadleaf weed control if that's what you're worried about. The thing like the creeping Charlie or wild violets would be a great time of year to be trying to control those.
Well, he gets the prize. He mentioned Creeping Charlie.
That's right. Yep.
Before.
There we go.
anybody else does?
52 Saturdays a year.
But how often, like we have clay soil at our lawn. How often should one aerate that?
I think it really just depends on how it's used. So if you have pets or you have a lot of kids or grandkids that are playing on it all the time, you're going to get more compaction over time. But most Minnesota soils are not going to need it more than once every 3 or 5 years.
All right, very good.
That's good news.
Yes, it is. I tried doing that a couple of times by myself, and the machine ran away with me. 651-989-9226. Well, we already have... are the abiders playing at the fair?
Oh, knock on.
Not yet? Or?
Not yet. No, we're not. But we are playing out at the Arboretum Farm Fest. The Arboretum is opening its new red barn. And I should say its old new red barn, because it's a renovated, old-time great barn out by the Bee Center. And they are having a special event the weekend of September 14th and 15th, and we are actually playing at that.
Oh, good.
We're playing from 5 to 7 on the 14th. So come on out, celebrate the new barn and the new landscape that's around it. It's going to be a really cool area. It's going to have good examples about growing food, pollinator plants. There'll be an outdoor kitchen for food preparation, for preservation classes. And then the barn will be available for, you know, you can rent it for your wedding or
oh,
an
you
event.
Can.
Yeah, we'll have classes out there. And then the Bee Center is right across the street, so you can learn everything you need to about the pollinators. So it's really, it's going to be awesome. I was just out there, Diana, my friend and I were there yesterday and driving around, checking it out. And they're still working on it, but it, oh, man, it, the barn is beautiful.
It's such a great location.
Beautiful,
anyway.
Yeah.
All right, 651-989-9226. Again, that's the same number if you want to send a text. I got a bunch of text messages
right.
as well.
Always good.
Let's see if we can. Here's one. My lawn is spotty with multiple types of grasses. Is it possible to replant another grass seed into the existing lawn to even it out?
Good question.
Yeah, I think you can with overseeding. Whether the effectiveness of that really just depends on how which species you have. So first I would try to figure out which species you have. There's a really good online tool from Purdue University that is a Purdue Turf ID tool, and they'll just walk you through on how to identify which grass you have. That's what I would start with first, and then try to find grass species that are similar to what you have, and you can overseed some grass seed this fall, starting right now until for the next 3 or 4 weeks would be great.
How do they get, and I know we have to break here, how do the golf courses get putting greens? What kind of grass is that it looks like it's seamless?
A carpet.
So yeah, that's creeping bent grass, and it's a grass that is actually a weed in home lawns, but when it's maintained at the level that they do at a golf course, it can be mown down to less than a tenth of an inch.
Tenth of an inch?
Wow. I didn't know that was a weed. And I mean, I know it's a weed in lawn grasses, but I didn't realize that was the same.
I had no idea. I'll tell you what, let's take a break.
New.
We have callers. We have texters. This is our Smart Garden Show live from the Minnesota State Fair here on News Talk 830 WCCO. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO, live from the Minnesota State Fair. Danny Long here with Julie and John from the U of M and answering your lawn and garden questions. Guys, we have a bunch of text messages and phone callers as well. But what you brought some goodies.
I did bring some goodies. So these are partridge pea seeds, and they are annual seeds. They are self-seeding annual, and they're fantastic for pollinators. Now, you want to wait and save these. Save them in your fridge and plant them next spring. And they grow to be about 2 feet. You can see on the cover that they've got really cool kind of irregular flowers, almost orchid-like flowers. They're really neat. And so this is an excellent pollinator plant, and everybody could pick up a packet. I brought those. These were donated to our cause by Prairie Moon Nursery, Minnesota Native Plant Nursery, and thank you to them for the seeds.
Oh, that's great. We need the pollinators.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big time. All right. I'll tell you what. Let's do this. We have callers and we have texted, which is typical for the show, busy show. Let's go to the phones. Ed is calling from Bloomington, I believe. Ed, thank you for waiting. What's your question?
I have some celebrity tomato growing in a large pot on my deck about 12 feet off of the ground.
Wow.
And it's a big bushy plant, of course, because it's a... it's a determinist type, but all the leaves are starting to turn brown. They're getting spots on them, even the ones
right
up near the top. And the only water that gets the leaves is from rain. I water just the bottom, which is covered with mulch. Why is this plant turning brown like that?
So Celebrity is actually a fairly rigorous tomato and a good one to grow. But we have had an extremely wet and humid summer, really lots of rain. And there are a number of different diseases that tomatoes get. Septoria leaf spot is one. Blossom end rot is another. Early blight is another. And it sounds to me like your plant has either septoria leaf spot or an early blight, or could have a combination of both, actually. The problem with that is once you see the disease, there's really nothing you can do about it. Purchasing a disease-resistant type of plant, a variety of plant, is a good start to that. And also sterilizing all of your containers, your cages, everything that you have to support that plant are also really important to prevent those pathogens from carrying over from year to year. So once you've seen that, there's nothing to do about it except it's not going to really affect your tomatoes. It's still going to produce, but the plant's not going to look very good, and people get really concerned about that. So I would say pick the tomatoes, and then next year when you're looking for tomatoes, choose a disease-resistant variety. Celebrity is pretty good, but we've had a really unusual year. And be sure to sterilize. Use a 10% bleach solution. Wipe down your cages, your stakes, your pots. And also, one last thing, don't reuse the soil from year to year on tomatoes or peppers or any of those nightshade families, because those soil-borne pathogens, those little diseases can retain and stay in that soil from year to year. So you want to use fresh, sterile soil every year.
All right, very good. 651-989-9226. That's the same number for a text besides the phone calls. Use that same number for your text messages, and we have many of them. Amaryllis leafed, but no flower. Put outdoors, brought in this week. Bulb got smaller with many smaller bulbs. Will it flower later this year, do you think?
Hard to say, but if it was outside and it was in the sunshine and it got a lot of good energy, built that up, then hopefully it's put that energy into the bulb. Sounds like you've got some little sports that are shooting off the side of those. You can pick those off. You can repot it if you want, and you can repot those too. They're very small. It'll take a long time for them to grow, but that's how they're propagated.
Okay. Let's go to Sioux Falls. I think Steve has been waiting there. Thank you, Steve. Are you still with us there?
You're welcome. I have a real nice hydrangea. The only problem is it hasn't bloomed for a few years. Any suggestion?
What do you know what type it is?
No, I don't, but it's only about 3 feet by 3 feet, something like that. It's not the real big ones. I have several of those.
Okay. The one hydrangea that people often complain that doesn't rebloom is called an endless summer. And it's a popular hydrangea. It came on the scene about 8 years ago maybe. And it is known for being able to be turned blue by adding aluminum sulfate to our soil. And that's one of its main features. It was also touted as being as flowering on new and existing wood, which also was another feature that people liked. The problem with it is that it's just not really lived up to its name, and it's kind of difficult to get it to rebloom for Minnesotans. So it may be, after if you've tried it for a number of years, it might be time to try a different hydrangea. There are so many awesome hydrangeas on the market, and you might want to look for a hydrangea paniculata. That's a panicle hydrangea. It's a different species, but really a robust bloomer. And there's a lot of different cultivars that you can choose from. So go to your local garden center, look around, see what you like. Also, you can visit the Arboretum Hydrangea Trials out on the 3 Mile Drive, and they are fantastic right now. They're absolutely beautiful. And you can look around there and see which hydrangea kind of strikes your fancy.
Do you guys know, and I think I was having a sample at a grocery store the other day, what's that new apple? Is it the Kiss?
First Kiss. Came out of about a year ago or a year and a half ago.
Okay, and I had a taste of it. It was pretty good.
Yeah?
But a texter wants to know, and maybe you don't know this, where is it here? What are the two types of apples that were used to create that apple? Do you guys know that?
Well, I don't know, actually, the parentage of that. I know for Sweet Tango, which is another popular kind of a pineapple flavor, that's a grandchild of the Honeycrisp, which is our state apple, by the way.
Oh, it is. That's right.
Yes, it is. And I'm not sure about the first kiss, though. That's a good question. You could probably look on the extension site, and it might tell you that under our apples.
Very good. Let's take a quick break. We have another half hour of the show to go, inviting our listeners to lawn and garden question or send a text, same number, 651-989-9226. Julie likes that sound of B.B. King, for sure. All right. We're talking lawns and gardens as we always do this hour. This time, of course, we're at the Minnesota State Fair at our CCO Radio broadcast booth. And a lot of good folks have joined us out here. And if you have a question, you can call it in, come up to our veranda, or text it in, 651-989-9226. You know, we were talking about apples, and you guys wanted to mention something about the state fair.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the horticulture building, there are currently several University of Minnesota apple varieties that are on display or for purchase. So if you do have specific questions about those apples, or if you want to try the latest and greatest, try them there.
Yeah, so the question with the first kiss apple, I'm sure they can tell them where the parentage came from.
I bet they could, sure. And again, where is that, where they can find that? In the
Egg Horticulture Building.
Very good. All right, back to the phones. Diane, I think, is calling from St. Paul, I believe. Diane, are you with us?
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I have a question about my tomatoes. I'm growing Early Girl and a cherry variety of Better Boys, and for some reason, my Early Girl seem to be the most affected. When I pick it and it's nice and red, I bring it in to cut it and eat it. I'll have a spot where the color is a little bit different, and it's very boggy, really soft, mushy. And when I cut into the tomato, it's as though the cell structure has just collapsed into mush. But the outside of the tomato shows absolutely no blemish, no sign of cracking or anything. Have you heard anything like this going on?
I have not. That is a really good question. You know, are you going to be at the fair at all?
Yes.
Why don't you swing by the Master Gardener booth over in the Horticulture Building and ask them about that? There's a lot of Master Gardeners who know more about tomatoes than I do, and I bet that you can find an answer there from them.
Oh, right.
Sounds to me like there's some kind of bacterial issue that maybe has, or a virus that your tomato has that's kind of translocated into the fruit itself. It's interesting that you don't see anything on the outside of the tomato, because that's real common. But that's interesting. I don't know if there's something wrong with the seed that initially started out. Yeah, ask the Master Gardeners. There are a lot of good tomato growers there that are better than I am, that's for sure. You got me stumped,
right,
though.
All right, well, see you at the fair. Thanks, Diane. 651-989-9226. John, a text said, what should I do to treat grass rust? What is that?
So rust is a pathogen. It's a disease that affects grasses. It actually comes from spirea as well. So it affects, its life cycle affects other horticultural plants, not just grass. But the rust can actually be lethal. And what we would recommend, we don't necessarily recommend applying fungicides to lawn to try to treat it. We just recommend planting improved cultivars and species that would be resistant to that rust. But for the most part, right now, just try to let it grow out of its life cycle and let it finish it and grow and develop, and hopefully it'll survive.
All right, very good. Back to the phones we go. Susie is calling in from Arden Hills, I believe. Good morning, Susie.
Hey, good morning, Danny. It's Susie from Woodbury now. We moved.
You moved.
We moved.
You never gave us a forwarding address.
Well, all right.
You do send us that.
She's a regular caller.
She is.
Yes, I am. I left my wisteria and all my shade plants, and now we're in Woodbury, and I've got sun. And we started a new garden, of course, and I did the endless summer, and so I'm like cringing as I'm listening to you, except ours is red, and here's my question. We were told by, should I say the name of the place where I got it? I'm going to Gerton's, that the red ones aren't as horribly fussy as the blue and the purple, where you have to add the extra.
Right.
Is that true?
Yeah, there's an endless summer is a series of hydrangeas. We started out with just the one endless summer. And now it's a series that Bailey's has been developing. Bailey's was a tremendous wholesale nursery. We're really proud to have them as part of Minnesota. And so there's the Endless Summer series. So there's a whole bunch of different hydrangeas under that, including the red one. I think it's called Summer Crush. Does that sound familiar, Susie? I don't know.
She's probably
listening. But that's a red hydrangea. Actually, it's a really neat hydrangea. So that one, I wouldn't worry too much about it. I think let's see how it goes. And but remember that's a series. So yeah, so that's a cool hydrangea. I just saw it the other day.
And Susie and her husband Kent have traveled with us before on
nice.
CCO tours.
Nice. That's
full disclosure
yeah,
there on that.
Yeah. Awesome.
But, all right. Ken, I think we have a question from our audience out here, too. Here's a text, though. Can I move a milkweed plant or trim to save it, and when?
You could trim it down if you're going to save it. It sounds to me like you're going to be doing some work or something, but milkweed are really tough to move because they have very long tap roots, these long straight roots that go down quite deep. So when you're going to have to dig it very deeply, and you might want to consider also adding some new milkweed plants next year.
And your question, what's your first name?
Larry.
All right, Larry, what's your question?
My question is, we're reseeding our backyard. This is a question to the grass guru. And I'd like to know what a very low maintenance, low input seed mixture would be that's kind to nature and bees.
That's a
what
good
would
question.
You suggest planting as a mixture?
Okay, so generally speaking, when we talk about low maintenance turf grasses that are also bee friendly, we're talking about fine fescues, and that there's a number of retailers, at least in the Twin Cities, that sell different fine fescue mixtures that are just pure fine fescues. We have a link on our website that's turf.umn.edu, and we have a link there for purchasing turf grass seed. And there you would be able to find, we also have lots of other information on low-mow fine fescues and lawns and things like that. We also have information on bee lawns. So, but the link there would be able to help you find a retailer that would that could set you up with some fine fescue grass seed.
All right. Thanks, Larry. Appreciate it. If you have a question in the audience, come on up to our deck and we'll get it answered for you. Or call us or text us. Now, the text came in, what is the best way to get rid of thistles in my flower garden? The thistle seems to spread. It's tough to say.
Yeah, so I'm assuming they mean Canada thistle, so I'm going to go with that. So Canada thistle, the unfortunate thing about Canada thistle is it has roots that not only go straight down into the soil, but down when they get about 2 feet deep, they'll branch out in either direction, and they'll pop up other plants off of the nodes that are on those roots. And that's why when we pull out a thistle and you think, boy, I got almost all the root, there's just this little bit left. That little tiny bit that's left down there is actually part of a complex root system that pops up even more plants out of that. It seems like you pull one out and you get three more thistles. So they're really, really hard to pull out, and they're very hard to dig. You have to be absolutely diligent. You can mow the thistles. You can, if you mow them at about when they get no more than 3 inches or so, maybe four, you can keep them, kind of knock them down that way because you're taking away the photosynthetic material. But in this case, I'm going to recommend that you actually use a combination of a broadleaf herbicide, and that you keep painting that onto those thistles, and that will translocate. This is a good time to do it because the plant is actively gathering energy to keep it going through the winter, and put it down into the roots and actually kill that root system. It's the only way that we can get, unless you're going to dig down 2 feet and dig those thistles out completely, which I don't think anybody really wants to do, and it's not very feasible for most people. So you're going to have to use, this is a case where you'll have to use a chemical to control that. And Canada thistle's on our noxious weed list in Minnesota, so it's our responsibility to actually take care of, you know, managing those thistles in our landscapes.
All right. 651-989-9226. We have callers. We have texters. Here's one for John. My lawn is mostly weeds, so should I use a weed and feed? All right.
That's a great question. Generally, we don't recommend using a weed and feed product because you're just broadcasting a herbicide into the environment. We prefer spot treating for your weed, knowing which weed you have, and then treating it. If it's all weeds, I would consider... You could use a weed and feed product, and that's one of the rare circumstances I would do that. I would really, one, know which weeds you have, and two, which herbicides are in your weed and feed product to know that you're actually applying an appropriate product there, or weed and feed product. If that's the case, in some cases, I think you can try to overseed and then just try to use proper cultural practices like fertilization, regular mowing, and things like that, and to try to improve the lawn over time and then work at spot treating. But if it's all weeds and things like that, sometimes it might be easier just to start over too. So
I have a story about weeds and lawns. I was just visiting my parents up in Moose Lake, and my mom is a diligent gardener, and she hand dug out her crabgrass in large patches and then took a topsoil, mixed in seed, and then has spread that into that area and then has been watering it. So is that the right way to approach like a big patch of crabgrass?
You could. At this time of the year, I wouldn't be worrying about crabgrass because it's a summer annual. Its life cycle is almost done. It'll be done at the first frost. So I would just be focusing on fertilization at this point. But if you have a lot of crabgrass in the summertime, you can try to do that. But one of the problems with crabgrass is it'll germinate throughout the whole summer.
Because of all those seeds.
Yeah, and the seeds, as soon as they get sunlight, they get moisture, they're going to germinate. And just because you rip up mature crabgrass plants, you may just get seedlings to re-germinate in that same spot.
She did get to it before it seeded, so that was good.
The labor of love for your mom.
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry, Mom.
We need to take a quick break. We have more show to come, more Smart Garden here live from the Minnesota State Fair here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And here we are back. And our CCO.
These are comfortable
veranda.
Chairs back
they
here.
They are very comfortable, yes.
They're nice.
We're talking
nice
lawns and gardens as we always do in this 8 o'clock hour. Julie and John here from the University of Minnesota. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, whether it be here at the fair or at home, we have tons of text messages and a lot of callers as well. So let's see how many folks we could help out here before we leave. Landscapers covered a 40-year-old oak about 4 feet up the trunk with mulch.
Whoa.
For a terracing. See, even the audience knows that's not a good thing.
That's
is
bad.
The mulch cutting off the oxygen to the tree? Is this good for the tree? It's a beautiful tree. We don't want to lose it.
Okay. Unbury that tree trunk. That's the first thing. We call that volcano mulch. And and many people have seen it around. And what happens is oftentimes that mulch is added and added to that trunk and it piles up along there. What happens is that you want to be sure that when you mulch a tree that you can see the root flare at the bottom. So that means mulching and then pulling it away from the tree so that you see that good, those big main roots there. When you pile it up like that, it holds moisture, it can hold insects, animals can get in there like mice and burrow in there. And it also can cause what's called stem girdling roots. And these are roots that shoot out from above the root flare that grow out from there because they're buried under this mulch. And they start to circle around that trunk of that tree and ultimately over time can choke off that tree and literally kill it. So best thing to do, go out, push that mulch away from that trunk till you can see that root flare. This also is the same with planting trees, is you always want to plant trees so you can see that root flare above the soil level. You never want to bury that root flare. And so, get out there, pull that back, and then scold that landscaper. They should know better than that. That's basically a death sentence for that oak tree.
Even the audience out here knew that.
Yeah, we have a smart audience.
Well, I should say.
Yeah, smart garden audience.
Absolutely. Here's a text that says, my lawn species is creeping Charlie. Now, didn't people plant that originally? I mean, that was used.
Well, it's also called ground ivy.
Yeah.
And it actually is sold in some states, not Minnesota, as a ground cover. And so it probably got here that way, just like purple loosestrife and buckthorn and a lot of other
wild violets.
Yeah, they're all planted as plants, garden plants.
Let's help out some phone callers as well. Mike, I believe, is calling in from Hastings, if Mike is still there. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a problem with my cucumbers. I have a white, powder on the leaves, and basically they've quit blooming.
Okay, so that is called powdery mildew. And powdery mildew is has fungal spores that are out in all over in the environment. It's just a part of our ecosystem, and it attacks things like cucumbers, squash, watermelons, peonies, lilacs, you see it all over the place. There's many plants that are susceptible. It usually doesn't kill the plant, except in very, very severe cases. But because your cucumber is an annual, it's going to be dying back pretty soon anyway. If it stopped blooming, it could be because it may start blooming again yet. It might be because of light, or it could be the end of the life of that annual vine. And so there's nothing to really do about it at this point. And in some cases with perennials, people will spray a fungicide, but it's really kind of a useless extra effort. And so I'm sorry I don't have a better answer for you at this point, but it's something you just have to tolerate.
Here's a text, I think, for John. It says, I have a section of my lawn that is different from the rest. It's very fine grass and thick, not very comfortable to walk or sit, and it's clumpy. Can I just round up it and reseed this fall?
Yeah, you could do that. If it's very clumpy, that kind of sounds like it, and if it's rough, it sounds like it might be tall fescue. Sometimes you can actually transition a lawn with overseeding and just try to improve that stand by just broadcasting seed over the top of that surface. But if it is tall fescue, sometimes one of the best ways to do that is just to kill off that existing area and plant something else, because the tall fescue is very vigorous and it'll survive most things.
Back to the phones we go. Gary is calling from Andover, Minnesota. Gary, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Yeah, I have a problem this year with my sweet corn. I've raised it for many years. It's getting long dry spells in the leaves. And I water it all the time, but I don't know, it gets, and it doesn't seem to produce as good this year as it does other years. I don't know why the leaves are kind of getting them long, dry spots in them.
Sure. I'm not super savvy on corn, but I know corn is a big feeder. It sucks a lot of nutrients from the soil. And if you've produced it for many, many years, and if you've planted it in roughly the same area, it might be time to really take a look at your soil. You can have a soil test done for your garden center or for your garden bed. And you can do that at the University of Minnesota at the Soil Test Laboratory. There's a website that you can get a form and go ahead and download that form and fill it out and send them a sample. I would suggest that before you plant it next year, just to see if there might be some enhancements that you need to do for your corn.
Text, let's see, how's our time doing? We have time yet for a call or two and text. How can you get rid of coarse fescue in the lawn?
Coarse fescue, that's very similar to the previous text message about the coarse fescue. That would be tall fescue. And tall fescue can really, the best way to do that is with a non-selective herbicide like glyphosate, just because it is so vigorous and it'll survive in the environment. So a non-selective herbicide like glyphosate.
What is your opinion, Texter wants to know, of chemical aeration? What is that?
So chemical aeration, I actually just had a question about this last night at at the turf booth in the Ag Horticulture building. But chemical aeration, the concept of that is just to try to improve airflow and drainage and water infiltration into the soil. And quite honestly, I would stick to the mechanical aeration, just because you're going to be relieving soil compaction and you're going to be adding air and water movement into the soil by using some mechanical as opposed to spraying a product to do that.
And for those folks that don't know what the core aeration is, it's a machine that kind of pulls...
Yep,
plugs out of the
soil.
Yeah. So you can rent those from most equipment rental places and for 60 to $90 for a day or for the weekend, and you can make an afternoon out of it. And
it kind of looks and it kind of looks like you own
Bite
a bunch
your
of
neighbors.
Bunch of poodles.
Yeah. Or geese.
or geese. Yes. Yeah. All right, let's grab one more phone call. I believe we can real fast. Harold is calling from Glencoe. Harold, what's your question, real fast?
Yes, sir. We have a Japanese lilac tree, and it's getting black spots on the leaves on the upper ends, and some of the leaves has holes in them. First time the tree is 4 years old. First time we've ever seen it. Can you help us with that?
Okay, so I would suggest this. I would say, why don't you take a couple pictures and go to our extension website, and which is extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden. And I would send that picture to Ask a Master Gardener. That's a really good tool that you can use any time of the year. We have Master Gardeners on, you know, ready and poised to answer those questions. I think that's going to be really a best way to do it, is to see a picture of that. So that's on our extension site.
And before we let you guys go, tell our listeners, at least here, at the, what we have out on our deck.
So we have some partridge pea seeds. These are an excellent pollinator annual. It's a self-seeding annual, about 2 feet tall, has bright yellow flowers. And this is these were sent over from Prairie Moon Nursery, one of our native nurseries here in Minnesota. And the last thing I wanted to mention, too, is our Yard and Garden News, which is our bi-monthly blog that we write. And we have some excellent information on there about wasps and other things. We have turf articles, all sorts of things. So if you don't take a look at that, you can subscribe to that and get an alert whenever a new publication comes out of that. So that's an excellent resource that people can use as well.
And we haven't mentioned it too often this hour, but again, what is that website at the U of M?
extension.umn.edu, and go to Yard and Garden, and you can find lots and lots of good turf information as well as garden plants and trees.
And if you're heading to the State Fair, and I hope you do, get over to the Ag Hort building, because what are you going to see there?
So the turf booth has a the turf group has a booth set up for the duration of the whole State Fair, where there's always an expert there to be able to answer any questions you might have about your lawn. And there's also
Master Gardeners and lots of other great resources.
Ask your questions away.
Yeah.
It's good to see you both. Thanks for stopping by here at our broadcast center. Let's hear it for Julie and John from the University of Minnesota.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.